Stay tuned for The Lynn Show. Today, I'm airing an interview with 75-year-old photographer Clyde Butcher. Clyde got his first camera at the age of 6 and immediately began to take photographs. But it was a long time before he decided that photography was his career. First, he had to go through a very rigorous program and become an architect. Listen to this charming man talk about why he chose photography, a very insecure career, over architecture, and how he continued to give up those more lucrative jobs and careers and return to photography and occasionally sailing. Listen to this charming man tell his roller coaster story and how he discovered the real Florida, which he is still documenting today. And come see him talk about his career and see slides of his many interesting and eclectic pictures at the Venice Performing Arts Center on February 23rd. It's a very interesting story told by a very charming man. So hang on. Here come the show.
Hearing from an inner voice. Finding choice where there's no choice. With gentle prodding. From the voice, oh, you really can. Deeper, deeper down you dive, where the child's gone to survive. From nowhere, sitting in my own soft lap, with all the time for us to chat, and my resources all on tap. Oh,
hello, and welcome to The Lynn Show. The Lynn Show is about being the person you really are. Not the person you think you're supposed to be. Not the person other people are. Not even the person they told you you had to be, or even the person you may think you are. But the person you really are. I interview people who make their living or their life with an art because when you listen to them talk, you can tell what it sounds like to be who you really are. And in my interview today with Clyde Butcher, you can tell that he is absolutely, minute to minute, who he really is. This is a man who is completely open to what looked good to him, what seemed interesting to him. And he pursued that completely in his life. So And this is a story best told by the man himself. So here now is Clyde Butcher. Okay, so I'm here with Clyde Butcher. I'm explaining to Clyde that I interview people who make their living or their life with an art. Do you want to tell us a little bit about what the art to which you are giving your life is?
The art of photography.
I only ask one question. Do you remember the very first time in your life that you were drawn to photography?
Probably, yeah. I was 9 years old.
Yeah.
And my folks took me to a lot of national parks.
Mm-hmm.
And I had been, really had fun with the camera.
Well, wait. So they had already given you a camera?
Yeah.
When did they give you a camera?
When I was seven.
Seven. And yeah. Immediately you began to take pictures?
Mm-hmm.
So this starts very young for you.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Do you remember if you asked for a camera or they just thought this would be a nice thing to give their son?
No, I think I asked for one.
Okay.
I'm not sure why I would have known what a camera was.
Yes. That's kind of interesting to me. The memory that you must have asked for it, that you were glad to have it, that you started using it right away, even though you can't remember what the motivation for that was?
Oh, I can tell. It was a Yashica 127 twin lens reflex.
So it was a pretty good camera.
Yeah, it was.
It wasn't a Kodak box right?
No. Well, actually, that was the first one.
So you did have, you started with the... Okay, but again, they must have had some sense that you were interested in...
I don't know why. They weren't in.
They weren't.
Well, you don't know. That's not true.
Mm-hmm.
When Dad was in the CC camps in Utah,
mm-hmm,
during the Depression, he was taking pictures and processing the film in camp. So that's probably the reason.
I'm sure.
Yeah, because why would I have got a camera?
Yeah, right. Okay, so you started out with the little Kodak. And then when you were nine, they gave you the... more.
Yeah, it was a Yashica. It was a twin lens 127. What 127 was 35 millimeter film without the sprockets. I don't make it anymore.
Well, okay, so you started taking pictures at nine. Mm-hmm. Did you continue? It became sort of avocation, a hobby, or?
Well, what it developed into was taking 16 millimeter movies. Yeah, that was, I think I started that probably 12.
Mm-hmm. What did you shoot?
Well, we were into archery, so I was photographing people playing with bows and arrows. I was actually making cartoons.
Really?
Yeah, well, you cut a piece of paper, you take a picture, you cut a little gore, it was animation.
Yeah, had you seen animation?
Tunes on Mouse.
Mickey Mouse, exactly, right. Right. So you begin very early,
mm-hmm,
to play with this, right?
The visual aspects of it.
Yes, right. Yes. Yeah. So that's very young to be thinking about what you might do with your life, but were you?
No.
No. Did you have any idea?
Well, when I was in high school, I was basically into math.
Ah.
Boating.
Boating.
I built a boat, 16-foot boat.
Wow. Okay, so you had a lot of interests.
Mm-hmm.
And at the point at which you got a computer or discovered computers, then you thought, this really interests me, I'll do this? Is that how it got went?
Well, no, it was basically when I went to college, the space program was happening.
So. Ah, so what did you major in or decide
to? I was going to go into computers, but when I got to college, I looked at these architects who were doing these funny architectural drawings. I said, I think I'll become an architect.
Yeah, back to the visual thing, yeah. Right? Yeah.
So I started, I switched to architecture and had no experience in drawing.
Mm-hmm.
I had experience in photographing, no experience in drawing. So first year, I failed the perspective course.
Oh, dear.
So to go on the next year, I had to take summer school.
Ah. Didn't want to.
Because you can't go on to the next class.
Yeah, no, right.
So I got an A in that, and I lived in my car because I didn't have any money to, live anything else. So there's my car, ate off my other friend's plates in the cafeteria.
My goodness. Well, you must badly have wanted to go to school.
Well, yeah. I didn't want to be a manual labor person. My dad was a sheet metal worker, and I didn't think I want to do that.
Yeah. So you d- decided that education was essential for you not to become that,
well,
right?
And my mother, too. My mother insisted that she wanted me to have a college education.
Even if it meant sleeping in your car?
Yeah, well, it was no big deal.
No, I know. You were young.
Young.
Right, I know. No, it was fine. It was part of the deal.
Yeah.
Okay, so did you complete an undergraduate degree in architecture?
Yeah, I actually, it was 470, I think it was 475 or 425 in my architectural freshman class. And all that 13 graduated.
Yeah, you know, I've only interviewed one architect, but he had the same story. It's very, very difficult.
It's very difficult.
Yeah, people don't realize how difficult it is.
Yeah.
Okay, so you're one of the 13.
Yes, so, but I was having problems with my delineation. So I wasn't capable. I just didn't have the background of drawing.
Mm-hmm.
So my first thing I did, we had to do make a three-dimensional object. And I made this thing, it was like a basketball with interior spaces. It was really, there was no right lines. They were all curves. And then the instructor says, okay, now draw the spaces. Oh, she.
Yeah, right.
If it was maybe rectangular, I could have figured that out. So I built a pinhole camera.
Wow.
And photographed the spaces. And got a good grade.
Yeah, because it was a really clever workaround, right?
And then we got more involved, and actually I think it was in my junior year, the first design project. We were each assigned a museum to build for a certain artist. Mine was Lipschitz. He's a cubist.
Mm-hmm.
So I had this very simple design. And I said, how am I going to make that thing interesting looking, the delineation? I've always been, into nature. So I always traveled around, and I had been up in the mountains up in San Luis Obispo and found a forest that was of dwarf pine trees.
Mm-hmm.
So I measured the trees and I built a wall to the scale of the trees.
Wow.
And built it in pieces. I mean, it was about, 4 foot, biggest piece. Everybody else was building little 16th-inch scale models, And the instructor says, what are you doing? I said, told him what I was doing. He says, well, I tell you what, this is an A or an F project. And if you get an F, you're put back in the year.
Ay, ay, ay.
So I worked 5 days a week straight, and I got an A. So that was my first real project. And then I started doing models of interior spaces. They were like stage sets.
Mm.
And I put real people in them. And I mean, it looked like real people. They were pictures of real people. So I kept developing that and became very good at the photography part. And at the same time...
Not realizing, right?
No, at the same time, though, I was dating my wife,
mm-hmm.
to be, and they would go up to Yosemite in the summer, and I went up to visit her in Yosemite and saw Ansel Adams Gallery. And my first impression, though, was really interesting. When I saw a picture of the redwood trees, you realize I'm an architect. I worked in a cabinet shop, I worked in construction, I built things. I said to myself, why would you photograph a redwood tree unless the tree was for sale?
Wow, right, unless you were going to use it for something, right?
Right,
right.
I was going to sell that tree, I got to pick a picture of it.
Yeah, right.
But I said, that's kind of different. And I started playing, photographing landscape. And then by 1969, I was getting pretty good at it, and I quit architecture and... started selling my work at in front of grocery stores on A-frames.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I'm really interested in that moment when you decided to turn in an established profession with the likelihood of being able to make a living,
mm-hmm.
for something that is unbelievably high risk and no guarantee.
Oh, yeah.
So do you remember what was going on inside of you when you did that? Or was it casual? Was it, oh, well,
I just knew that, I mean, architecture was so... The problem with architecture is that you have clients.
That's right. That's right.
And it's just a tough business.
And you're a kind of self-employed guy, right?
Yeah. So, in fact, my first business when I was 14, selling manufacturing arrows. So, but I did this art show, and I sold made as much money as I made in my architecture. It wasn't a lot.
At the beginning, you mean?
Yeah.
Right away?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Then it got worse.
Yeah, right, yeah, right, you're right, right, yeah, right.
It was a surprise, but it got worse.
And yeah.
And so I was at a couple of art shows in Wall, and Peter Gates was a customer there, and he really liked my work, and he felt that we should sell it commercially into Penny's and Ward's and Sears and that sort of stuff. So we started a business up.
Wow.
It was called iEncounter.
iEncounter.
Mm-hmm.
Oh yes, right. EYE.
Mm-hmm. And we had a showroom in a furniture mart in downtown LA. And then I was all in black and white. And then I decided this is not working. We were doing kind of okay, but I thought maybe I should get into color.
Mm.
I think that was 1971, 72, and I think it was the same year Ansel Adams started shooting color. If you want to make a living, you have something that sells,
mm-hmm.
you know. And he hadn't hit the commercial market yet.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, when I first saw his Moonrise over Hernandez, it was $75.
Wow.
We were living on $100 a month. So.
Yeah.
So that grew and grew, and we ended up also doing picture clocks.
Picture clocks.
We would take one of my photographs and print a clock face on it, punch a hole in it, put a mechanism in.
Oh, you're kidding. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Right.
So I became the largest clock manufacturer in the United States.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
I knew that because I bought all the mechanisms. From Japan and Germany.
Wow.
And
it's a niche market.
Yeah, but it was a big market.
Yeah, but it's a niche. I mean, yeah. Nobody else is doing it, right?
No. Oh,
right.
Yeah. You have 200 employees. It's, oh, God. Too many people.
So you took the photographs,
mm-hmm.
and you duplicated them?
I had them offset printed.
Offset printing, right?
We had a mill that made our own frame material. We had to... mount the pictures, we had to frame them.
Yeah, right. So you didn't do all this. They did.
Well, my employees did.
Yeah, right, right. Wow. So
I had to manage it all.
Yes, and it was your idea and you took the photographs.
Right.
Right.
We sold 2 semis a day, trucks full of clocks a day.
Oh, my God. Yeah, it's amazing. So how long are you still doing that?
I'm still taking pictures. But no, we're not doing it. We got out of the clock thing in about 1978, I think it was.
Okay, so you got out of the clock thing. What did you do?
Went sailing.
Again, you are saying, yes, this is great, and it makes money, but I'm done with this now. I'm going to do something that doesn't make any money, but feels good.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we sold the company, so we had a little bit of money to live on for
mm-hmm.
a couple years.
Yeah.
And so we came to Florida in 78 for sailing, and then by 1980 we moved here full time. And I didn't see anything in a photograph here.
Wow.
Nothing. It was kind of boring. There's no mountains, you know, nothing like that. And I think it was in 1981 or 82. Salvador Dali just opened his gallery.
Who is this?
Salvador Dali.
Oh, Salvador Dali. Yes, right. I talk about clocks and odd clocks.
Oh, yeah. Interesting concept. Well, that's, I didn't think about it in that direction.
Mm-hmm.
So I saw his work in the gallery, and I started doing
You mean the gallery in St. Pete?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So I started doing kind of abstract outer space stuff, putting many pictures together, and which I'll have those, a couple of those in this show.
We should say now that, just mention now that you will be appearing at the Venice Performing Arts Friday, on Friday in February, at the end of February,
right.
Where you will be speaking and also showing slides of your photographs.
Right.
Okay. And some of them will be this.
It actually will start with my first one when I was 8 years old.
Really?
Of me taking pictures when I was 8.
Talk about retrospective.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. That's wonderful.
And then also my beginnings in architecture model photography. And then my duplicating or Ansel Adams type things.
Mm-hmm.
And then into my, what I'm doing now.
Will there be clocks?
There'll be pictures of clocks.
Okay.
Yes, there'll be a picture of clocks.
Okay, and then into the Dali-esque outer space.
Right.
Right? Is that what you're still doing?
No. Also, Saturday, the following day, I'll be at the gallery to sign books and such.
Oh, wonderful. Where?
237 Warfield Avenue. Salvador Dali inspired me to do this, kind of like Jerry Yulsman, one of the first person to put many pictures together.
Are we talking about collage-like?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so that's how I got started. And then I decided I want to get back into doing the art shows again. So I got some of my old color work out in art shows.
Mm-hmm.
And on the way to an art show in Winter Park, it was in 1984, I stopped by Fishing Creek, Cypress Knee Museum. I saw Tom Gaskin's play. And my wife, Nikki, she just loves the site, old Florida.
Memorabilia, right.
And Tom saw that I was getting really bored.
Mm-hmm.
So he said, well, there's a boardwalk in back. Why don't you go and check out the boardwalk? So I said, oh, that sounds good. So, because I would like to see you. And it was a boardwalk. A boardwalk.
The width of a board he's showing.
Right. And railings, pieces of limbs kind of stuck to trees. But anyhow, got me in there and got excited about it. I came back the next day with my camera and started photographing it. And the same week I was down at a camera store and I met Oscar Thompson. And Oscar was looking at these slides and I was looking over his shoulder at this light table and I said, you spend to Africa? He looked at me real funny. Golly, no, that's not Africa, that's Big Cypress. I said, well, where's Big Cypress? He says, oh, it's down the street. I said, I'd like to go there someday. He put me in his four-wheel drive and took me down to Big Cypress.
Wow.
So between those two experiences, in 1 week, I found Florida.
Yes, yeah.
And
captured it.
Yeah, and yeah. I've been doing it ever since. I started in color.
Mm-hmm.
I was selling really well, obviously, and people were getting excited. Because people come up to my booth and they ask me, have you been to Africa? Same thing I did to Oscar.
Uh-huh.
Because people from Florida didn't have any idea what Florida was.
Yeah.
So I was shooting in color, but, you know, in Florida, the color, sometimes some of the greens are just so green. You want to kind of throw up. You know, so I was thinking about going back to black and white.
Mm-hmm.
But at the art shows, I would sell 50 times more than a black and white guy. Black and white people could almost pay for their entry, maybe the gas. Where I was, last show I did was $18,000 in a weekend. And the guy was doing the best in black and white, but did $300 the same weekend.
My goodness.
So you can see it was really a financial decision to go into black and white.
Yet again, you leave the potentially lucrative for the potentially not.
Right. Absolutely.
It's the story of your life.
Yeah, that's the story of my life. So I got the good wife.
Oh, yeah, well, see. And it's all that matters, right?
It's really what matters.
Well, and no, it sounds like you did fine all around. It sounds like every one of these choices was correct.
In the long run.
In the long run, yeah. Mm-hmm. Not because you were making choices based on supporting yourself, but you did. Anyway, the other question I ask, I think you've actually answered, and that is, having given a life to the art not only of photography, but of things visual, right? Mm-hmm. Would you say just something about what that is like, what you think about it, how you feel about it?
The choices were based on emotion.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Which not logic.
No, but it worked for you.
Yeah.
It worked for you. It's lovely. It's lovely to say that one can trust one's emotion, one's instinct, one's sense of what's right.
Yeah.
You know, but for
unfortunately,
you.
If you have to be good at what you're doing, if you're going to do that.
That is exactly right.
Because I did go bankrupt.
Oh, did you?
Point. Yeah. And we had nothing, and we came to Florida, had nothing. So it was not an easy run, but I think doing what one is excited about. You don't get in photography because you think you're going to make a bunch of money.
No. Do you mind my asking how old you are?
75.
75. Oh, my God. No. Still kicking is right. All right. This was just wonderful. Thank you so much, Clyde. So, as I said, when you listen to Clyde, you can hear what it sounds like to be the person you really are. And it is my hope that when you listen to Clyde, that you're asking yourself, is this how I feel about my life? Well, if you are not being the person you really are and you want to talk to me about that, please go up on my website, thelynshow.com. And as always, I sure hope you got something from this show that you can use, something that will bring you back, because I will be back next week, same time, same station. And as always, I sure hope you will be too.
You see, I'm getting older. My hair is turning gray. Oh, you say my face and figure have both seen better days. Well, I won't be retiring. I won't slip out of sight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I just keep returning like some goddamn boomerang. No, I won't go. My shot, my time has come and gone. Oh, won't I please get off the stage, let someone else get on. Well, I won't be relegated or leave without a fight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a bell I keep on ringing, not a chime that I once rang. You may think it's unseemly. Well, I don't give a dang. No, I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Rising from the ashes, every chance I get. I may be running out of time, but it ain't over yet. 'Cause me and Sister Phoenix, we won't give up the flight. No, no, we will not go gentle into that good night. And I won't go with a whimper. Going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I may not be as juicy, hell, but I still got some tang. So you won't hear me simper. I may have gotten limper, but I won't go with a whimper.
Well, I think when you do this sort of journey, you have a better concept of life.
For example?
You can see through things better.
Mm-hmm.
Politically, it's terrible.
Yes, it is.
I can see through it.
I see. So are you saying you see through it, but you're not affected by it?
Oh, I'm affected by it. But you have to just kind of brush it aside and keep going.
I see. And
because I've dealt with, Senator Graham, Governor Childs, Senator Childs, Gore.
You mean that you've...
had many conversations with him.
Uh-huh.
I took President Carter for a swamp walk and spent all day with him.
Wow.
He's a really neat guy. It's too bad most presidents aren't like him.
I agree. But I'll probably take that out. So you're saying that that it is your ability to see.
Right?
And
unfortunately, you can see into the future, too, by seeing what's happening in the past.
Yes.
And it's... we have a... the world, not us, the world has a scary future.
Yeah, I agree.
Because the... right now, it seems like the world's working on anger instead of love.
Well...
And I think humans have always kind of probably been that way. When you're out in nature, you discover that everything is aggressive. Trees are aggressive.
They're all looking for their peace, for their survival, right?
I've seen these beautiful egrets catch other egrets by the throat.
Right.
You know, trees will kill things underneath them. They don't want that underneath them.
No.
You know. So you see nature, you see that everything is struggling to survive, and I guess humans are the same way.
Only, I am going to take this out, but what I think is that what humans miss is that survival is better when you cooperate and not when you fight. That it works against survival, you know, but...
The problem is with humans, we're intellectual.
Yes.
And we can build bad devices.
But yes, we can. We can. And we can, what is the word I want? I can't remember the word for this, but figure out ways to explain why we have to have it.
Right,
right. You know?
Like for us, I'm really into the environment. In global warming, we have on our house solar panels.
Yeah,
solar hot water. We have a Volt.
A what?
Volt car.
A Volt car.
It gets 55 miles with being plugged in. And last year we did 10,000 miles, and we spent $200 on gas.
Oh my God! Okay. That's wonderful.
But all that electricity for the house and the car is made by our panels. Our electrical bill here is zero.
Wow, that's great.
So we're not adding to the...
No, you're not taking from the grid. I want to say one more time that you will be appearing at the Venice Performing Arts Facility in February. And do you want to look it up? Can you look it up?
I think it's...
That would be great.
I think it's the 23rd.